Good morning. The last day I saw my friend Jody, she had lost her ability to speak. She was terribly thin and had a short, spiky covering of downy hair on her head. She bore just a marginal resemblance to the vital presence I once knew. Still, she was determined to be present to all of us who had come in a steady stream to say our final goodbyes. She lifted her head to each person who came through the door and met us with a penetrating look. Her gaze stuck with each person as we took the chair of honor at her bedside, held her hand or stroked her forehead, and said whatever we had to say to her, our stories, our prayers, our hopes for peace at the end. Who knew so much could be communicated in a look? Brain tumors had stolen her ability to smile or shed a tear, but there was so much love, gratitude, sorrow, and more in her eyes. For one last time, she made each of us feel loved and treasured, as if our words mattered deeply and she didn't want anything to get in the way of our saying them. Her wordless response spoke volumes about what mattered at the end. I will never forget the dignity and strength and focus she brought to this task when she had to be worn out, perhaps frightened, and sad beyond measure to be leaving everything she loved. Jody held on to have this moment with so many who had loved her, and she died a week later. Dying with such fortitude and grace is part of Jody's legacy, one that is completely consistent with the person she was. Jody didn't leave behind children or a lot of money or much in the way of physical objects generally. She had moved cross-country about a year earlier to be with a new love in her life, and she pared down to make the transition. On her annual service trips to remote parts of Africa and Guatemala, she proved that she didn't require much to live with gusto. She cut her hair boy short for these jaunts, packed in a small bag, and learned to wash her hair with 2 cups of water. Although Jody had a weakness for clothes and for looking good, she seemed to have no problem setting that aside when she had a job to do. Keeping her priorities straight is something Jody taught by example, and that lesson is another part of her legacy. You can't say of many people that they have friends around the globe, but Jody did. She was close to her family, too, and rarely missed a holiday or major event with them. She was a much-loved sister, daughter, aunt, great-aunt, generous and fun to be with. Even from a distance, she nurtured those family connections in every way she could. Jody had lifelong friends from her hometown on Lake Michigan, friends from her career in healthcare, fellowship friends, book group friends, League of Women Voter friends, neighborhood friends from every house she ever lived in, and friends among the Maasai women in Kenya and those with whom she volunteered in Guatemala. The genius of her knack for friendship was how special each of us felt. There were 3 memorial services for Jody, one right here in our old fellowship hall, one at her hometown in Kewanee, and one in North Carolina. There were a whole lot of us who felt connected with Jody. The depth and range of her relationships is another part of Jody's legacy. All of us knew of her deep commitment in recent years to volunteer work with international service projects to benefit the poor women in Guatemala and Kenya. Before her retirement, she spent most of her vacations and no small part of her personal income to trek to those countries and do what she could firsthand. Then she came back home to raise funds for those programs, selling beaded jewelry, handcrafted scarves, and artwork at every venue she could think of. This is one of those necklaces, and Leah pulled out for me this morning this crown that she brought back and gave to Roger, who passed it on to Leah. I think a lot of you probably have similar objects in your possession. Jody arranged for our congregation to sponsor a young woman from a Kenyan village to get nurses training so that person could return to her people and provide health care. She continued that commitment until her own health precluded international travel, but made sure that those projects were identified as places where memorial gifts could be made in her name. Part of Jody's legacy is in faraway villages with people she came to know and love there. Lifelong work as a healthcare worker doesn't make one rich, but Jody left a legacy of generosity. If she had a spare ticket to an event, it was her treat. If there was a special gathering, she brought an elegant dessert or a bottle of wine. If a political or social cause called to her, she gave time and money. She was part of this congregation's Acorn Society, leaving some portion of her estate to further our mission. Jody knew how to go after what she wanted. She said she learned that from her mother. I met her at the hospital where we both worked when she requested an appointment with me. She told me she was there to learn how to get my job one day, or one like it. She had been working as an occupational therapist for a long time and was ready for a change. My administrative job turned out to be no great prize, but Jody retrained for a job in human resources and had a long and successful run in her new field. She was like that about many things: traveling, even though she didn't have a lot of money, finding a way to keep her beloved dome home on Lake Michigan after a divorce, and pursuing the guy to whom she'd been introduced by friends. An impressive and tenacious streak of settling on and getting what she wanted is no small part of her legacy. Jody wasn't a saint. She loved to gossip and had a low threshold for people who talk too much in a group or seem a little too full of themselves. Did I mention her fondness for clothing and jewelry? Like all of us, she had her share of human imperfection, and that's part of her legacy too. Jody's throaty laugh was one part of her legacy I hope I can hold on to. She found a lot to chuckle about, even though she'd suffered her share of disappointment and loss even before the cancer struck. It's usually the first thing that comes to mind when I think of my friend, and the memory of that slightly rascally never fails to make me smile. A laugh, friendships broad and deep, nurturing family relationships, taking risks and going after what matters, strength and dignity in illness and dying, time and fortune in service to others, blessed imperfection, a generous spirit. While there will be no statues to Jody, no building bearing her name, no public tributes beyond her memorial services, she left a rich legacy. I don't know if Jody ever spent time thinking about her legacy, but I know that presidents do. Even before Barack Obama was reelected, I read opinion pieces about what he might accomplish in his second term, because that is where presidents often have an opportunity to make their mark. George W. Bush, not known as a deeply reflective soul, was concerned about his legacy. It's one reason he spent time on education policy. He called it the civil rights struggle of our time and came up with a memorable slogan, "No Child Left Behind." Whatever your opinion about President Bush, it's hard to argue that his education policy hasn't made an impact. Even Abraham Lincoln was not immune to giving thought to what his legacy might be. According to the historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, Lincoln gave thought to what he might accomplish in life, even as a boy. Here is what Goodwin said in a 2005 interview on National Public Radio, describing an episode of depression in Lincoln's life after he had broken off his engagement with Mary Todd. His best friend, Joshua Speed, came to his side and said, "Lincoln, if you do not rally, you will die." And he said, "I would just as soon die now, but I haven't done anything yet to be remembered by." He had this dream from the time he was a young boy, but he was fearful of just dying and turning to dust, that somehow if he could accomplish something great, this is the way the Greeks used to think, Your name would be remembered after you die. And that powered him through the early losses of his childhood. It powered him through his early days in state legislature, and it helped him get out of this depression. And the great thing is that many years later, when he finally signed the Emancipation Proclamation, Joshua Speed came to see him, and he said, "Well, Speed, remember that conversation we had when I was in my depths? Well, maybe at last my fondest wish has been realized. I will be remembered after I die." What about all the rest of us? Is it a good thing to look at things as Lincoln did? To set out to accomplish great things and then actually do them? Would the world be a better place if more of us viewed our limited time on Earth with this kind of focus? Would we be better people? My grandmother lived to be 101, and I saw no evidence that she set out to accomplish great things. She wasn't one to fret about what she wasn't doing in her life. She just set about doing all the things set before her, and there were always more than enough daily chores. Grandma seemed to know how to make a rich life out of not much. Remodeling and redecorating to her meant a new slipcover for the couch or a fresh coat of paint on the kitchen cupboards. Along the way, she became noted for her hospitality, feeding hordes of family and friends for holidays, hunting and quilting weekends, and summer haymaking. She entertained company often on Sunday afternoons. I can still see her passing around trays of cookies and oranges. She'll be long remembered for her incredible homemade bread and donuts and for the magic carpet of flowers she grew on the front of the farmhouse every year. That's a quiet kind of legacy, but a treasured one to our family. How would Grandma like to have been remembered? I doubt she gave it much thought. The farm where she and Grandpa made a life is crumbling. And aside from photographs, none of us really has not much that is tangible to remember her by. I have the rag rug in my upstairs hallway that she made out of scraps of old clothing. I'll never ever throw that away. As long as her children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren live, she'll be remembered as a good, kind, hard-working woman who lived a simple and seemingly rewarding life before the whole notion of simplicity as a lifestyle choice became trendy. That's a legacy I can only dream of. I was born in different times. My generation was told we could do anything, be anything we wanted, and many of us took that seriously to a fault. Those kinds of expectations can lead to a lot of angst and to considerable disappointment when we don't make a Lincoln-esque mark on the world. I can relate to Dan wanting to be a basketball star. When I was in my late 20s, I thought it possible I might become governor of Wisconsin one day. I'm so ill-suited for a life in politics that the whole idea makes me shake my head at the thought of that earlier me. Other dreams are not set aside so easily, and if they keep coming back, I guess we should pay attention. I struggled for decades of my adult life with whether to go to seminary and become an ordained minister before finally deciding at age 55 that time had come and gone in my life. The desire to do the work of ministry will always be with me, though, and I've discovered a number of ways to express that calling through volunteer work and in my everyday life. Do I want to be remembered for this work? I'm not conscious of feeling that way, but I do hope my kids will remember a mom who felt called to ministry and was faithful to that call in my own way. It would make me happy to know that part of my legacy to them is the understanding that there are many paths to achieving goals and contentment. I hope I will be remembered as a wife, mother, daughter, and friend who did her loving best in these roles, even though I've often fallen short. I hope my work as a children's librarian, which I came to later in life, will spark a passion for reading in a few kids. If I have introduced some to a book that gives them joy and makes them want to read more, that's a legacy I would be proud to own. Is there anything else that matters to me in the way of legacy? would all that be enough if I died tomorrow? If I were to pick one thing that I would like to outlast me, it would be my writing. But I haven't dedicated myself, as many have, to getting my work out in the world. Even though reading and writing have been like lifelong passions of mine, it's far too easy to put writing on a back burner. Who's going to want to read my stuff anyhow? Oops, better throw another load of wash in the laundry. What will we have for dinner tonight? I'd better write out these bills before I sit down at my keyboard. I'll never make money doing this anyway. I'm just too tired to send out cover letters after working and running errands all day. The famous poet Mary Oliver said in a magazine interview that she never took interesting jobs, even when she needed the money. They were too distracting, took too much energy away from her main goal of making writing the number one thing in her life. Besides being remarkably talented and devoting hours of each day, year after year, to developing that talent, Mary Oliver knew in her bones what she wanted to do, what she was meant to do. She will leave behind a body of work that will affirm and inspire generations, a literary legacy of gigantic proportions. I don't know Mary Oliver except through her work, but she doesn't seem to have set out to create a legacy. She just built one by doing the work that she knew she was suited to and that she loved, and doing it better than most anyone could. We can aspire for the kind of greatness Abraham Lincoln did, but not all of us have the drive, fortitude, or layers of genius he did to realize such a lofty goal. Or we can follow the path of the Mary Olivers of the world and be mindful and intentional about what we most want to accomplish in our lives and let legacy take care of itself. As she herself puts it so exquisitely in her poem, The Summer Day, "Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" My friend Jody saw that she had choices about what to do with her one wild and precious life, and she lived as if she really understood that. Along the way, she created a legacy of a life that was well, if imperfectly, lived. The paradox of creating a worthy legacy, it seems to me, is to not pay too much attention to having one. If we strive to live well and be wholly ourselves, our legacy will take care of itself. I'm a great reader of obituaries. I scan that section of the paper every day and often get a kick out of the amazing stories that emerge from a few column inches of newsprint. We all end up with a legacy of one kind or another. And I often wonder how many people would be surprised by how their loved ones summed up their lives. As with trying to understand the true meaning of a great book, many people may take different meanings from a review of a person's life. Individuals have legacies, so do families, institutions, and countries. The Fox Valley UU Fellowship will leave a legacy to this community and to all of our members, past, present, and future. Memorial Day is a good time to pause in our busy lives and remember what others have left us, materially and spiritually. My sister and I spent a morning recently picking out our father's gravestone. It was one detail he didn't prearrange. I was surprised at what a moving experience it was. How could we reflect the man he was on a piece of Wausau red granite? We couldn't begin to, of course, but we did our best to make this one piece of rock in a country cemetery speak of Don Remmel. It will be installed soon. In fact, it may have been installed in the last few days. And I will take flowers there for him and for my grandparents. I will remember their legacies. May we all strive to live lives of meaning and purpose, and by doing so, create a legacy we would be proud to own.